mainly are looking at effective coordination and alignment in the delivery of health services, so as to ensure the realization of the NDP goals, ensure healthy lives, but also quality health services to the people. As the Appropriations Committee, our other area of interest is value for money, effectiveness and efficiencies in health sector planning and resource allocation. I wish to take this opportunity and welcome all of you to this meeting. It is a joint meeting on the Standing Committee on Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Health for hearings and deliberations scheduled for the next 3 days with the national and provincial departments of health, national treasury, financial and fiscal commission, auditor general of South Africa, and civil society stakeholders. As honorable members and all stakeholders present this morning, the vision of the NDP is a health system that works for everyone, including people in the rural areas, comprising an appropriate balance between preventive, health promotion, and curative services that are affordable and accessible to all. We note that health services are a concurrent national and provincial competence. Provincial health departments are the main delivery agents, with a national department responsible for policy development, legislation, and program leadership, but also monitoring of all those grants that are transferred to provinces. In addition, the Constitution states that the three spheres have to assist and support each other, share information, and coordinate their efforts so as to provide citizens with a comprehensive package of health services. Nevertheless, our economy is not growing fast enough, and budgets in many key service delivery areas are under immense strain. Health expenditure has grown in real terms by about 1.3% between 2012/13 and 2018/19. Public health budgets remain under pressure as a result of increased personnel costs, higher expenditure on the antiretroviral program, and currency depreciation. Over the past year or two, through interactions with the Minister of Health and engagements with the National Department of Health and civil society stakeholders, the committees have made a number of findings pertaining to the health sector, and these include, among others, challenges in the effectiveness of intergovernmental planning, coordination, and budgeting, which manifests itself in resource allocation. There are spending and service level inequities between rural and urban areas. Many of the primary health care facilities are still to achieve the status of ideal clinic. There are supply chain management and procurement inefficiencies in most of the provincial departments. Financial management remains a challenge in many of the provincial departments. Of course, also the IT, which is supposed to assist with collection of data and also collation of that data so that the department or national department or national treasury can take correct decisions using that data. So I think there's a serious also a weakness in the area of the IT for collection of data. Notwithstanding these challenges, we note that there is definite progress being made in the health sector. Mortality rates for adults and children have peaked and are declining. Provincial health departments now employ more than 300,000 personnel, of whom about 64% are health practitioners, and there is evidence of a real reduction in infant and child mortality beyond expectations and targets. Indeed, the sector should continue to build on these accomplishments. Following the findings made in our various committee reports on the various challenges facing the sector, the committee is resolved to have these hearings with the national and provincial departments of health so as to have a frank and open discussion on the challenges and improvement opportunities in the sector and find practical and workable solutions to ensure that we have a health system that works for everyone. Our people deserve and demand quality health services. This is critical if we are to achieve the development goals contained in the NDP, especially the goals of radically transforming our country. Honorable members, let us have fruitful discussions. I believe that there will be value for money for coming here and spending time, 3 days, just looking at where the money is and where the department is confronted by challenges, and then we come up with possible solutions, because indeed we want to achieve a healthy nation, because with a healthy nation I think we can then continue to develop, knowing that there will be people who will indeed benefit from the development by government. Otherwise, we don't want that we develop and at the end we find that we don't have a nation to benefit from those developments. Thank you very much. All right. I will then allow my co-chair to also say something.
No, thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. In welcoming your opening remarks, I don't think that it will be appropriate. I don't see it here. It will be appropriate for us to know who is here, because the room is full and we don't know who is here. So I would suggest that we usually, what we do in health is that we introduce ourselves as members, the department, both whoever, and we use our mics, and so that whoever is coming outside, because obviously committees are open for public, we know who is coming outside either the Department of Health, the Free State, Eastern Cape, National Department, and Parliament. I want us to. I'm proposing that, Chair. I don't think it will take long. Just to, we usually start with honourable members. I will start with myself. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. My name is Lindelwa Dunjwa. Thank you, Chair.
My name is Yvonne Hosa, but I'm commonly known as B. So Yvonne is just an official name in my ID. Thank you very much. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Appropriations. Then coming to this side.
Good morning, chairs and colleagues. My name is A.M. Sheikh Imam. I'm a member of both the Standing Committee on Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Health.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Matlubanzi Machafta, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Health.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Doreen Sinokwanyane. I also sit on both the Health Standing Health Portfolio Committee and the Appropriations Standing Committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Shamalan Khosa, a member of the Committee on Health.
Good morning, Committee Member Walmart James.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lungiswa James, member of this committee.
Thank you.
I've seen you, Queen. Vitra mina hi mina Shila N'waxope, ni tekiwe ka Switori.
I'm trying to check if all the members have introduced themselves so that we can move on to the staff member. Okay. Honorable member.
Morning all, my name is Alan McLaughlin. I'm a member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
Thank you very much.
I will, Chair, can I make a humble plea? a humble one. Our phones are to be on silent, not even vibrate. I'm one of those chairs that are easily irritated by a phone. It takes our concentration off, so please, WhatsApp, whatever, it must be on silent so that we are able to concentrate. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, co-chairs and the honorable members. My name is Tsweliwe Madlopa. I'm the member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
We will then hand over to the department. In my understanding is that there is Free State, there's National Department, there's Eastern Cape, and Free State, but I don't know which one is here, but I see Free State, I see Eastern Cape and National Department. DG, you will start. I see the office of the AG has also arrived. After the introduction by both departments, it will be the office of the DG. And my apologies, I will introduce the staff from the department, from the Portfolio Committee on Health. On my far right, behind with a red dress, is Vyokas Masalamba, the Secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Health. Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor. Zube, who is our researcher. Moses, who is also our researcher. I think that is the staff chair from the Portfolio Committee on Health. I don't see the other.
Thank you, Honorable Chairs, Honorable Bosa, and Honorable Duncha, and Honorable Members. My name is Precious, Malibona Precious Matsusa. I'm the Director General of Health. I'm here with the CFO, Jan van der Berg, Tiny Rainey, our Head of Corporate Services, Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Andrews, Dr. Andan Pili, responsible for the regulatory agencies, but also for the procurement section for pharmaceuticals, the sector-wide procurement, but also NHI also fall under him, and Ms. Jeanette Hunter, who is currently driving the Ideal Clinic, but is also responsible for NCDs, primary health care, and I thought I needed to give you an idea of this, of the content. Dr. Pili cannot join us. He's joining the minister to present the National Strategic Plan for HIV and AIDS for cabinet approval, which will be launched end of the month. And Mrs. Matsau is representing the minister of the African Union. As you know, South Africa was chairing and we are handing over to the next chair, which is one of the Troika countries. Thank you. We have also the parliamentary officers, Mr. Kata, who is known to most of you, and Cindy Lesotho, director in my office. Thank you very much.
No, Department of Health from provinces, they know how we do things, so they will introduce them. Everybody is going to introduce himself, starting from that side, right at the back, to the office of the DG, except those that have been introduced. And and then our visitors, if they are, they will also tell them what is their names and where they are coming from, because we must know. I don't think it will take us long, just your name and where
you're
coming
from. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Phumza Kyanji. I'm the MEC for Health in the Eastern Cape. I'm with the AZOD, who's going to introduce all the other officials.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Toby Lembengash. I'm the AJOD of Health Eastern Cape. I've got colleagues of mine. I've got the CFO, Simon Kay, he's at the back. I've got Nick Ntswane, the acting HR at DDG over here. And I've got Mlamli Tuswa, he's the chief director for infrastructure. of court, and go see in the office of the SG over there. Thank you, Chairperson. And then we've got another person who is a parliamentary liaison officer. Thanks.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Tembekile Plaki, parliamentary liaison, National Treasury.
Good morning. My name is Aparna Kolipara from National Treasury's Public Finance Division. Thank you.
Good morning, co-chairs and honorable members. My name is Marumo Mage. I'm a director, Provincial Budget Analysis at the National Treasury.
Good morning, honorable members and co-chairs. My name is Russell Rainsberg. I'm with the Rural Health Advocacy Project.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Renee Anderson. I'm with MMI, Metropolitan Health.
Can we allow the office of the AG, if I'm not... The people that have just come in against the wall, can they introduce themselves using the mic?
Good morning, coaches. My name is Christopher and I'm from Sibinit. I'm just monitoring. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members and other colleagues. My name is Andri Segeto. I'm the Business Executive from the Office of the Auditor General responsible for health.
Morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Semi Dibate from the Office of the Auditor General in Infrastructure.
Morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is John Kossoff. I'm a Manager in the Performance Audit Division in Pretoria of the AGSA.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Jolene Pillay. I'm the Senior Manager as the Auditor General. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Maud Matondo. I'm the Senior Manager IT Audit from the Auditor General. Thank you.
Thank you. Next to Ms. Nyatela, there's a lady in an orange and the gentleman right behind at the back.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Chairs. My name is General Smith, and I'm a member of the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, Co-Chairs. I'm Siyabonga Mkhwanazi, Independent Media.
All right, the officials attached to the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Can you please introduce yourself quickly? We are running out of time.
Good morning, my name is Darren Arons. I'm Committee Secretary, Standing Committee on Appropriations.
Good morning, Zandile Hadi, Committee Secretary, Standing Committee on Appropriations.
A very good morning, co-chairpersons. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to everybody in the room. My name is Tepo Masu. I'm the advisor to the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Musa Zamisa, one of the researchers for the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
Are we done? Helena.
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Pilelani Dlomo. I'm a researcher for the committee. Thank you.
Mavalo Gani from Parliamentary Communication Services.
It does look like we are done. Thank you so much. Let's get down to business now. Now that we know each other, I think we must feel free. Let's relax. Let's make this meeting our meeting, not a meeting between us and them. It's our meeting because all of us are here to come and find out the best solutions for this country. This country, all right, we are on apologies. Apologies, are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. From the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we've got an apology from Dr. Fig, who's running late. Honorable Changwini, who's on study leave, and Honorable Ngwangwa, who's on oversight with another committee. In terms of written apologies received from stakeholders, we've got a written apology from the Minister of Health and the Deputy Minister of Health. We've got an apology from the MEC from the Free State, MEC Kompela. Another one from the Northwest, MEC Dr. Masike, and MEC Nelson Northwest Treasury.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I've got there is an apology from the whip of the committee. It's stuck on the train. He said there is a problem in the train. Running late, actually. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable members, on our side, Mr. Mahlalela, Honorable Chris Mahlalela, been out of the country, so that's the only apology from our side that we have. Honorable members, do you accept the apologies? Dr. Madope?
Yeah, Chair, but our concern is around about the MECs that are not here. We are not hearing the reasons. It's just apology. The reasons. This is a very serious meeting, as we have indicated, that we need to come together and find a solution for this health sector.
All right. I know that there is a written apology from the MEC from Free State and Northwest. So maybe the reasons are in the letter that were forwarded. And then, yeah, let me finish this one. Can you give us the reasons, Sandy?
The MEC from the Free State is attending a legislature sitting, so he's not able to be here.
Tabling.
The Minister of Health is, as indicated, is attending the National Strategic Plan for HIV, which is being presented at the Cabinet. Then the MEC for Health from the Northwest, he has been requested to appear before the Portfolio Committee of Provincial Legislature to present the APP. And the Deputy Minister of Health is also attending the National Strategic Plan before Cabinet.
So the reasons have been given. Honorable Shoppes Tole.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is very sad that the Minister and the Deputy Minister are not here, at least if one of them was here, because this is a very important meeting. We cannot have excuses like things are done at province, it's not our... We wanted to deal with this thing and come together once and for all, because the health of the nation, as the Chair has indicated, is of paramount importance.
We take note of the matter raised by Honourable Member Shoppes Tole. I know that I had... If members do accept the apologies, if we can finish that part. Honorable members, Nukwanyana, it is a procedural matter. We have to deal with it accordingly.
Thanks, Chair. I propose that we accept the apologies.
Any seconder? Seconded. Thank you very much. Co-Chair?
No, Chair. I think I need to express my disappointment. The mixed feelings. Both these provinces that have apologized, there is no indication if there is anybody that has been sent on behalf of either the MEC. So can that be cleared? Because we don't want to start on a footing that we assume that the HODA make an example of Free State is going to be here, of Northwest is going to be here. There is no indication. Can that be indicated so that we take it, we know as the department, as the Portfolio Committee on Health, what are the steps that we are to take if there is nobody at all?
Well, I received a call from the MEC of the Department of Health in Free State, who indicated that there will be somebody representing him in this meeting. All that we have to do now is to check if that person is here or that person will be joining us later. Okay, I'm told the HOD is on his way here, which then will allow us to make a little bit of a change on our... Yeah, if by the time he's expected to present, he's not here, we will take the province that is here. If it's okay with you. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you very much. There's a hand. Okay. Honorable Member McLaughlin.
Apologies, Madam Chair. I wanted to raise an objection on the basis that the very reason that we had this meeting was so that the provinces could come and report, because when the national department comes to us, they keep saying this is a provincial thing, this is a provincial thing. Now when we invite the provinces to come, the MEC doesn't bother to pitch up. One's attending a legislative function in his own province. Surely Parliament trumps that. We have the right to call people and summon people to this, to these committee meetings. I don't accept that he just sends his HOD along. That's setting the official again. So the political responsible person is not going to be present, but he sends an official in his place. And I've raised my objection to that, ma'am. I think it's unacceptable.
Well, it's a genuine concern. We take note of this. I'm sure we will be able to also write and raise our concern to those ministers for future, you know, engagement with them. Doctor, if you can assist me so that you can proceed to the...
Thank you, Chair. In view of what is happening now, and we looks like we are trying to accept the apologies and not accept them because there are no apologies, what do we do? Do we accept the apologies in view of what is happening now?
Unfortunately, this part is coming a little late where we have already accepted. I wish we had come before that, because we can't move forward and backwards. So I hear you, but we have already ruled on the matter, or there's already been a decision on the matter. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed? Honorable members, ready? You see, this country needs a health sector that is effective, efficient, and well-performing, and also responsive to the needs of the people of this country. Now, in order to achieve this, or to achieve a well-performing health sector, obviously you will then have a value chain that includes your infrastructure, your capacitated HR human resources that are appointed, I'm not talking vacant posts, appointed, and you need equipment, working equipment, and you need medicines, and medical products. I want to also say medical care. We need that care, right? But also service delivery in the form of your clinical service delivery and support. Now, today we then have decided, responding also to the needs of the people that came to us as Appropriations Committee, people complaining. Remember, we also do constituency work as we move around doing site visits. We've picked up a lot of concerns about, by the people on the ground. We then thought we also have a role of checking on what exactly is the problem and how can we assist as Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Health, assist in ensuring that we indeed achieve this well-performing health sector and our people on the ground. They live, all of them, across color lines, age groups, whether rural or urban, they are well. They live a healthy life. And key to us as Appropriations is that we are aware of the budget that has been allocated. Now, let's look at how best is this budget used and whether we are able to make an impact or not. And if we are not able to make an impact, let's look at the challenges. But you see, with all of us sitting here, we have to find the solution. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here, which means we are the leadership that have got to find solutions in the health sector for our people. Now, thanks God, the government has a national development plan, and it has got goals that are linked to the health sector. So in the presentation by the Department of Health, we will be looking at all those issues, and then we then look at those issues in as far as the provincial departments, the implementation by the provincial departments is concerned, because that is where the provincial departments are at a delivery point. But national department, I know that they develop policies, so we would like to know if those policies are in place. But after development of the policies, you would expect the national department also to monitor. I know that the provincial departments are autonomous. But regardless, we have a constitution that talks about cooperative governance, which allows us some coordination of some kind through monitoring and evaluation, and also giving some political, I'm sorry, not political guidance, sorry for that, giving guidance so that at the end of the day, the NDP goals are achieved. But also we have this healthy nation. Thank you very much. We will then hand over to the National Department of Health to talk to us. And honorable members, ours is to listen carefully. I'll appreciate that we don't interject. Allow them to go through the... Maybe I should consult with you on that one. Would you be happy with us allowing them to present, and thereafter we then interrogate the whole presentation? What would be in the best interest of the honorable members?
The summary that you have made, I think...
So we allow them to present, and then at the end, then interrogate. Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, HOD. I'm sorry, DG.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I am from the province.
Yes, thank you. I've been given 45 minutes to make this presentation. Honorable members, we have forwarded a file that gives a far more detailed input for each area. We tried to answer every single question that has been presented to us. So this presentation is actually a consolidation of all those questions that have been asked. And this I will have to do in 45 minutes, and I'll do my best to keep it in time. Thank you very much. So the first one is about alignment between national health budget processes and provincial health budget, but also alignment in health information systems. The third is ensuring critical functions such as procurement, human resources, financial management are appropriately devolved and designated. The next one was about ensuring effective management of personnel expenditure. The next, alignment of the national and provincial health infrastructure priorities. And finally, any other matter. We also tried to raise one or two issues that we thought were of importance. So for the first one on alignment between national health budget processes and provincial budget processes, we try to also highlight the challenges and measures that we think the committee should consider so as we can address this particular issue. Firstly, the National Department of Health and provinces, we do meet regularly and on four occasions, actually, in a build-up towards the budget speeches, both the one by the Minister of Finance and the provincial budget speeches. Firstly, there's a bilateral, as an example, between National Department of Health and National Treasury, which serves as a foundation for discussions. This is followed by health functional group meetings. We have what we call health functional group meetings between Treasury, a meeting of chief financial officers of provincial health departments in advance of discussions, and this is in preparation for the 10x10. This is followed by health 10x10 budget committee. 10x10 budget committee is actually chaired by myself and my counterpart in Treasury. It sometimes is the DG of Treasury or the DDGs, the two DDGs responsible for intergovernmental relations. But we have what you call the budget benchmark exercise, which happens between January and February. And it's an interaction, again, between National Department of Health and provincial health departments. And this is mainly to look at the medium-term expenditure framework, meaning we put those processes in place so that Parliament understands that we have put measures and processes in place. But we look at the readiness to implement priorities, particularly when it relates to concurrent functions, but also better understanding of total business of the department within the public sector, and strengthen alignment between planning and budgeting. And it's not easy meetings. I mean, we engage, we debate, and we are really tough with each other. And also protection of non-negotiables. And I will talk about this because it's a process that has been initiated by the minister and MECs to ensure that we protect certain areas in health, and we call these non-negotiables. And I'll also share with you what the performance is of each province with regard to non-negotiables. But in addition, we do this within the provided guidelines and prescripts. One, the MTEF guidelines by National Treasury, as well as the database and some of the other narratives, the annual performance plan, but we align these with the provincial annual performance plans, meaning there's a cycle that we follow, including the conditional grants and the in-year monitoring and other financial management improvement plans that we've initiated at national. So the source of funding, I just thought perhaps as a reminder, we needed to know more or less what the source of funding is. Like I said in the previous meetings where I addressed committees, that if you look at budget, the health budget, the ones that we have direct influence on at national is the conditional grants. And from the slide reflected on the screen, you'll realize that conditional grants are only about 20%, 21, 22%. When the equitable share is 79%. So equitable share actually accounts for a very significant proportion of the budget. And this is the budget that is directly allocated to the province. So the one where we really have influence is the conditional grant. And this is where we can really, really intervene at any point in time. But the other, we don't actually have muscle, I must say. And I'd like to put that up front. But if you look at the equitable share stake per province and you look at the allocations per province, you'll realize that the two provinces that have actually had a very small allocation below the expected allocation, our view is that health allocation should not be less than 50%. And if you check, the only provinces that have gone beyond the 30% allocation is Gauteng Province, KZN, and Western Cape. The rest are below 30%, but the worst allocation is in Northwest and Northern Cape. Now, honorable members, if you think these provinces that are allocated below these benchmarks are going to perform, I think it's just wishful thinking, I must say. So we have to correct this. We have to correct this. And I'm putting this up front so that you know that beyond the other problems that we talk about, this is one area that we never discuss and that we never refer to. And equally, if you look at the conditional stake, you'll see that Western Cape, Gauteng, and KZN have beyond 40%. And it's understandable why. It's because the training grants actually are allocated these all provinces, but these are the three provinces that provide significant training programs through our academic institutions. Mpumalanga is the least allocated, if you look, in the conditional grant allocation. So our budget benchmark analysis actually help us do this kind of analysis to look at where does the money go and how are these allocations done. Now, when we did Chapter 6 of the National Health White Paper, we had proposed that for the district health, because this is where the investment should be, it should be 46%, provincial Hospital services, 18%, for EMS, and I would like to talk about EMS later. For instance, health sector allocation for 17-18, if you look at the breakdown according to the allocations, the district health services, it's at 8%. It has an 8% increase. So the budget share is 46%. So that is reasonable because this is where most investments should be. But the EMS, the increase is minimal. And if you notice, we've had a report by the Human Rights Commission expressing serious concerns about EMS services in the country. Now, if you look at the allocations for EMS, these are the least allocated. Now, there's no link between the allocation and some of the concerns that have been raised regarding EMS. Provincial hospital services, it has had a slight increase of 6%. Central hospitals also. Health science training, 5%. Healthcare support services, 3%. And the facility management, 2%. So these have been the increase of budget. And I thought I needed to show you so that you have a sense of areas where interventions will be needed. So key priorities that have been highlighted. For instance, ideal clinic versus target outputs. Now, protection of non-negotiables. Now, non-negotiables are actually about medicines, about lab tests, about what the business, the actual business of health. Now, if those non-negotiable allocations are eroded, it means there won't be a health service in this country. And I would like to talk to those non-negotiables later so that you can see what the problems are per province and how we can intervene and help the provinces to respond. But equally, procurement and implementation of monitoring system, I've highlighted the EMS about the fleet and the services. Unless the allocation is appropriate for the EMS, I think we'll have problems. And also how ambulances are procured. Again, the protection of non-negotiables. For some provinces, they decomplex hospitals so that they can have joint staff establishment. Perhaps if this can be interrogated, it would be very helpful because it has implications for COE. Management of the Cuban program is another important area because as Cuban students come back, and I think there are about 2,000 of them that we have to prepare for as of next year. If your COE is not addressed, you're not going to be able to absorb them. So we'd have made this huge investment at a loss.
Sorry, Ma. As you are aware, the COE, we might not even understand. I don't think I'm the only one here, let's be honest. So if you can help us with these abbreviations so that we can understand exactly.
Okay, cost of employment.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
You see, I thought I was in the appropriations committee, so it's standard language. I'm sorry. My apologies. The next is NHLS. This is one particular area of concern, Chair. I've raised this, and I'll raise it again, that it's an area that requires to be protected. I've raised it previously. I'll raise it again. The Cuban program, I've already referred to that, as well as the medical legal cases that I think we can avoid. So if you look at the health sector nominal budget growth, our weighted average is that health sector should grow by 8.5%. But if you look at how the growth has been per different areas and per province, the health sector increase has actually been at 6.6%, far less than our expected 8.5% growth. So obviously it means health has been underfunded. And the only provinces that have been coping is Mpumalanga, that has increased their budget by 10.9%, and Northwest, which is at 8.9%. But the others have been grossly underfunded. Limpopo at 4.3%, Western Cape at 5.9%, and Eastern Cape at 6.2%. So it tells you that either services are going to have to be cut or employment cost of employment is going to have to be reduced. So we have to address this. If we want health to perform, we have to interrogate every budget per province and look at how best we can support them appropriately. If you look at the distribution of the health sector allocation per province, and you compare that with the population size, both insured and non-insured population, you'll see as a percentage of the population what the budget share is per population. I thought that would also be another indicator that would help the committee look at their budgeting processes. So the distribution of health sector allocation, budgets allocated to provinces per population figure, between KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, 22 and 23% each, they take up about 45% of the health sector budget. It's understandable because they account for about more or less the same 45% of the population as well. So it makes sense. But we have to look at what that allocation means for responding to the problems. Northern Cape has the lowest proportion, it's understandable, relative to the population. But we've seen that the increase, even though it was expected to be at 8.5%, it's only Mpumalanga and Northwest that have been able to increase beyond the 8.5%. So others have very, very low increases, and they are actually not coping. And in terms of economic classification, personnel, now the health sector, this includes personnel, agencies, consultants, contractors, account for about 66%. So capital assets, transfers, goods and services are the difference. Goods and services are 25%. So if you look at what the target is of 85% versus nominal increase, you'll see where the increases are. Even personnel who are not coping, the increase is 7.3. As expected, it's still way below, and in other provinces far below the target. That means is that the provinces will not be able to employ any additional staff. They will not be able to employ extra doctors, extra nurses. So it has implications for service delivery. For goods and services, you'll see that the increase, and I'd like to talk a little bit about goods and services, because with the currency problems that we've had, the rand-dollar exchange, it has affected the purchase of equipment, it has affected the purchase of pharmaceuticals. So it means we have less money to buy medicines and equipment. Now with this kind of growth of 5.2%, it means those provinces that are supposed to be paying suppliers will not be able to do so. So it means they have less in the bank to buy medicines and equipment. But in addition, they've been allocated less, meaning it's a two-edged sword. One, they have less money. Two, the currency fluctuation factor, meaning the dollar exchange rent has affected their buying power. So equally with the capital assets and so on. So these accruals and other problems will continue. They'll persist because one, they have less, and two, they also have these other issues that I've raised. So this is just a breakdown in details in terms of, in rent terms, of what the nominal growth has been over the years. Again, the provincial personnel summary, I just gave the personnel summary. If you look at the number of posts globally, that is for all the provinces, and those that are filled, and those are filled additional to the establishment, because we have to address that. The provinces must deal with the posts that are additional to the establishment so that they clean up their PESAL, so that they know exactly which posts are funded posts. It gives a very huge vacancy rate, a vacancy rate of 45,733 posts. And if you look at breakdown, it's a huge number. But we don't know what this vacancy means in terms of
the posts that are linked to funded posts, those that are external to the establishment. And I think this is the area that needs to be cleaned up a bit. But there are vacancies and there are areas that need to be addressed. But if you link that now to the cost of employment, now the cost of employment receives an increase of 7.3%, which is about 7.6 billion for a total allocation of 111 billion. On average, earnings of public servants are projected to grow by 8.5% per annum over the next 3 years. This is in accordance with the National Treasury Guidelines. So the health sector cost of employment will grow on average at 6.6, which is a shortfall of about 1.9%.
Can we get, because it's not numbered, we don't see where the DGE is now.
It's
21. Let me check which document. Can that be ordered? We can't all talk at the same time, honorable members. Can we establish which document are members having in front of them vis-a-vis what is then?
Page 21.
Can we move faster, please? Can she be assisted if there is a spare document that is numbered, yes, so that we are able to move?
No, Chair, I think the problem that we have, because I have a similar problem, we've been following, we have all the first ones, but it's just now that we don't have these pages, I don't know. But the first ones we've been following, we have them here on this document. Maybe it's just the pages that are missing. I don't know. Okay.
Okay, honorable members, the file is detailed information, and then the slide is a consolidation of all what is in the file, just to help you. Thank you.
No, I don't need the explanation.
Okay. So, Chair, if you relate the HR, human resources or personnel, with the cost of employment allocation, you'll realize that health is actually under, and you follow the National Treasury Guidelines of 8.5% increase per annum. You'll realize that actually the growth is at 6.6%. Hence, there's a shortfall of 1.9%. Hence, I was saying that the only provinces that will be able to maintain public servant earning growth is Mpumalanga at an average of 8.6%. Below 6% growth is Limpopo, Northern Cape and Western Cape, meaning they will not be able to employ. That's in a nutshell. If they need more doctors, more nurses, they will not be able to do so. So the distribution of health sector allocation, so this is an overview, and the shortfall, like I was saying, it gives you a breakdown per province, and you'll see those provinces that are worse off than others. And I use this example to say, if you look at the distribution of health professionals in the public and private sector, there are certain areas where we're highly deficient, meaning we may not even be able to employ some of them, and others we do have a few. We may not even be able to grow in certain areas if you look at the numbers. But these are
some of those that we need: environmental health practitioners, audiologists, optometrists, occupational therapists, pharmacists, physiotherapists, psychologists, clinical psychologists. Those are the ones that I think will be needing to respond particularly to school health services. Like I said, about 3 million school health learners that we assess need these services. So we'll have to see how we access these services. For goods and services, Chair, like I said, the health sector goods and services, again, they received an increase of 5.2%, which is an allocation of 50.2 billion. The increase is below the projected inflation of 6.2% and medical price index of 8.8%. Allocation is expected to increase over the MTEF period at an average of 6.9%. So the shortfall, again, in the COE is currently being subsidized by goods and services, unfortunately. So there's actually no real increase, and there's pressure on non-negotiables, and I'll refer to that later. And you'll see the breakdown per province on goods and services. For those provinces that have at least increased their budgets, Free State, Mpumalanga and Northwest, they've got some increase over the MTEF. Others are surely going to have a significant shortfall. And this is just a pie graph showing a distribution of your conditional grants. With the conditional grants, Gauteng, KZN, like I said, take up a significant proportion, purely because, and I'll explain in which areas of the grant do they have a significant proportion. Now, if you look at the conditional grant per province, and Northern Cape, when it comes to the health infrastructure grant, it has shown a drop, as well as the Western Cape. HIV, AIDS has shown almost like a reasonable growth. I mean, I can't complain when it comes to HIV, except that within the grant, there's a provision for NHLS. And I can show you that there are still areas where there's underpayment, you know, in some of the provinces. And we've done that analysis, but we're writing provinces to say they need to deal with this. For HPTDG, you'll realize that those provinces that have an increase, it's reasonable. I mean, they're all at 6% each, and NTSG, except for Mpumalanga, it's minus 4. And for HFRG, those provinces that are concerned, like I said, it's Western Cape and Northern Cape. Now, if you look at the breakdown in these bar charts, you'll realize that those provinces that have high allocations for NTSG is Western Cape, Gauteng, Free State, and mainly Western Cape. And actually, even KZN is supposed to have slightly more than others, precisely because they have central hospitals and training institutions. Equally with the NTSG, HPTDG, both grants provide for training. HIV AIDS KwaZulu-Natal is expected because it carries the highest burden of disease, as well as Gauteng, so it's within reason. So the distribution of the grants, I think, is reasonable. The ones, though, that I would like us to monitor very closely are the health infrastructure grant. And when I come to the health infrastructure, I'll show you our monitoring system for the health infrastructure per province. The non-negotiables, honorable members, I'll talk to them later. I would like you to just see what are those things that we monitor very closely, that are a concern, whereby I said if goods and services allocations are cut, it means there won't be food supplies, there won't be medical supplies, there won't be medicines and laboratory services. These are the ones that we track very, very closely. And you'll see in terms of the allocations, you know, and the selected items, like I said, the increase has been quite below nominal the nominal increase is below the target. It's at 6%, and the expected increase is supposed to be 8.5%. So our interventions were firstly to see whether the more transversal contracts that Treasury's coordinating can achieve this, would like to bring the committee here to the attention of the committee. The initiative that we started with the Chief Procurement Officer on how we can do linen, equipment, security services and others to try and correct this problem. So there is a proposal that is underway. Would like them to come and present, perhaps particularly to the Appropriations Committee, so that we can see the procurement approach that you are proposing that we hope will improve the performance at provincial level. And this is also about the medical waste disposal, medical equipment, linen, all these things that the AG had findings on. We have come up with a proposal on how we think, you know, they need to be changed on how they are procured and managed. And equally, we continue to support provinces in that. We are working with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. They have identified experts who are going to be working with every province. Well, not all provinces have agreed to this, but those that have agreed, as KZN, Free State, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo, Gauteng had already started that process. These four will have these chartered accountants full-time helping them to sort out their audits. Hopefully, by the time we have the AG, they would have resolved most of the audit findings. And for the transversal contracts, I've already said we're working with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. We have quarterly gathering, the meeting of the CFOs. They specifically monitor non-negotiables. Like I said, I will come back to them. Chair, with regard to the information systems, one of the other areas that we said we needed to address is alignment of health information systems. The reason being that we need to, our approach, like you said correctly, Chair, that we have to come up with norms and standards and guidelines. We've done precisely that for information systems. We've come up with the e-health strategy and m-health strategy to ensure that our systems are interoperable, but they also have sufficient security features. So based on this, we went and assessed every single system in the province, primary healthcare systems and hospital systems. And I just wanted to share with you what our findings were. This is the footprint per province of the information systems. If you look, Chair, in Gauteng alone, they have anything from inter-system, computer assist. I mean, they've got all sorts of systems. At hospital level, equal. Meaning per province, you'll see the kind of systems. Now, if you look at the kind of investments over the years that went into this system, they are far more than 4 billion rand. And the concern that we have is that when we assess these systems, some of them still run on word perfect. I don't know how many of you chairs still work on or still remember word perfect. Archaic systems. So we had to get rid of them. But we were saying to provinces, we give you a norm and standard. You meet within these norms and standards. If this system meet and comply, you keep them. But what our finding also was not just about the performance of the system and whether they were interoperable or not. It was also about how much they cost. They range anything from 25,000 to a billion. So we were saying, but surely there must be a guide on how much you spend on information systems. So we did the costing analysis as well, but these were specifically for primary healthcare-based systems. But in addition, we're also doing that kind of
cost analysis for the hospital level. So we want to clean up this area, Chair, because there's potential for savings. But not only savings, but it will help with planning. It will also ensure that we have information. You know, it will help us to measure our performance. So we started first with the patient registration, which we'll use as a platform on which all these other systems should hook on. And we can ensure that at least we have a much more integrated approach on how we plan for information. So, Chair, we have so far purchased about 11 computers, installed them in 1,754 primary healthcare facilities, and there are over 5 million people registered. By end of this month, hopefully, the number would have gone up, because this is as at beginning of March. And these are happening on an ongoing basis. But we also would like every province to have a proper filing system. Chair, this is important also for the litigation process. We've actually identified that there are some provinces whereby files get missing. And when they go missing, they don't even know, because there's no proper filing system. But it's required in terms of the National Health Act. So it's just simple things that we can do, having proper filing, but also having proper records. It's also the finding that the AG has come up with repeatedly. When we started this process, there were about, as an example, 52 records in one clinic by a nurse that a nurse must fill. And we've reduced this significantly to 6. And every province must be able to work based on that. It's not possible that a nurse can fill in 52 registers. Some are exercise books, some are, you know, and if you look at the AG's report and findings, it's about that. And our view is that if you just introduce the filing and you introduce those records in every province, it should solve most of the things. You don't even need to invest in sophisticated computer systems. The basic one that helps clerks with a good filing system is enough to get us going. We've also introduced Mom Connect, and we've got 1.5 million now registered. And it's a good system because they raise their complaints. About 1,187 of them have raised their complaints since they've been connected. And we've had nurses also registering. We also introduced a similar system for the youth, because some of our adolescents have said, you know, they don't like going to our facilities because they're not treated with respect and so on, and some shy away from seeking care. So even those have been able to access services. But the one highlight here is the Pharmaceutical National Surveillance System, which helps us to monitor. Now, we're able to monitor supplies at national, in hospitals, in warehouses. We'll tell you what the stock levels are. And it's the basis on which I'm able to write HODs and say, you have not paid this supplier, or please watch out, you are running low on your supplies. This system has actually helped us in that it helped us monitor suppliers also if they do not supply, and we are able to raise alert. Now, if you look at slide 46, you will see that delivery within the lead time had actually increased to 70%, and that it was poor for about in 23% of the cases. So we'd like to improve that. Delivery in full on first delivery, even that has increased to 81%, and complete on-time submission of monthly data has also improved. So those are the things that we are monitoring at national, but the provinces must ensure that certain things can still be manually done. Equally, the dashboard at hospital level. We have set up these systems at central hospital, tertiary hospital, and regional hospital, meaning every HOD in the province has access to these. They can also monitor whether there are stocks in your hospital or not at any point in time. And we've, again, done the same thing. The drug stock out, Chair, you may have noticed that there was a stock out problem. We partnered with Vodacom, and they installed these. They actually donated these systems to us, and we install them in the provinces. We can monitor whether, you know, it's called a stock visibility system. You know whether there's stock or not. But it gets people to order. When something has run out, they must order on time. But it also shows whether they've received it or not. So we also ensure that every single HOD in the province has this system so that they can monitor their own stock. So for the district health information system, Chair, this is important for planning, and it's also a basis on which the Auditor General monitors our performance in terms of data quality and the usefulness of data. So, and it is for that reason that we have to ensure that the paper-based data collection tools are rationalized. Chair, like I said, in one facility, NS has 56 registrars. Now, the AG has to go. Sometimes it's an exercise book. So we want this, our data to be credible and to be solid. And it is in this area that we are intervening on an ongoing basis as national. So we've got other internal data audit tools that we're working with provinces on to improve the data, and Dr. Andrews is providing that support and training of the health facility managers. But the one that is also important, Chair, is the aligning of billing and financial management system. We've come up with the national cost standards, and that can help us accommodate financial modules, and that will also ensure that there can be compliance with accounting principles. And we extended the scope of CSIR to ensure that the health information system also includes these. And the provincial budget allocation must ensure that our information system can provide for better monitoring of finance and contract management. So what we did, Chair, we came up with a central database of funded population beneficiary registry. And we were working with the Council for Medical Scheme precisely because the medical scheme users do use our facilities. And there's been over the years a very poor system of revenue collection of medical aid users. So we had to do it. Secondly, RAF also, Chair, we had to ensure that we align with RAF so that we can also collect revenue. The third area, I think, that the provinces raised as a concern was the correctional services, because they render services on behalf of correctional services, but they don't get reimbursed for those services. So it eats up on their budgets. So we came up with some coding system to have a common patient identifier, coding of a clinical coding, for instance, based on ICD-10, and we also came up with common forms. Now, what is done over a three-year period, in fact, from 2013 to 2016, we've been looking at the targets that we set for the revenue and how much has been collected. And you'll see there's been variance per province. For instance, Eastern Cape, the target was 104 in 2013, and they collected 124 million. And in 2014, actually got even better. They collected 181 million. But in 2016, it was less. They under-recovered. So you'll see that it's been going well. So we'll go back and see where there's been under-recovery in some of the provinces. For instance, Gauteng province is the one that concerns us the most, because it's 76 million that was under-recovered, which is quite huge. But if you look at Western Cape, they've actually over-recovered by 109, which is quite significant. So the provinces have been doing very well. So we'll go back and see when they were doing so well, what is it that has gone wrong, and how can we sustain the over-recovery. For instance, if you check, most provinces have really been doing well over the years. So this is the trend showing how they've been doing over a number of years in revenue collection.
And it's precisely because we provided support. We had unemployed graduates working full-time, and we had us, and they were in finance, HR, and IT. But now their contracts are coming to an end. Maybe that explains this slowdown. And, of course, it's understandable. Provinces don't have money to absorb them. So it means this work is going to be undermined, obviously, because they won't have money to employ them. But the ITC billing system, we've also looked at what kind of billing systems are available in different provinces. And this gives you a sense of who the vendors are, in which hospitals, and the functionality of this billing system per province. So we've also shared that information with you, Chair. Now, in terms of procurement, human resources, financial management, I would like to talk a little bit about non-negotiables. Chair, what we did, we looked at those areas whereby if there's non-performance, it means there's no health services or the health system is underperforming. It's in the non-negotiable area. And I said perhaps I will pick it per province, just a summary, but I'll give you the dashboards per province. We've got a dashboard for every province on non-negotiable for every area that is of interest. Firstly, you'll see that the original non-negotiable for 2016-17 was 36 billion, with an adjustment of 5.4% increasing to about 38 billion. Now, the major increase was noted in Limpopo and Northern Cape, which is about 28.9%, and in Limpopo, and 15.2%. So, overall, there is a reasonable increase, except that there's been overspending, right? Purely because of payment of accruals. Areas of concern, particularly in these two provinces, has been on children's vaccine, where they've overspent by 63.6%. And we asked the question, this overspend, could it be that they under-allocated or they under-budgeted? Or could it be that it's because of the currency fluctuation factor that I referred to earlier? Or could it be that, you know, they've got budget constraints? So we would like to do that analysis based on these three factors to understand what this overspending is in this particular area, as well as the security services. So if you look at the dashboard, for instance, per province, it just shows you, as an example, the provinces where there's over or underspending, and it shows where the red is. The red is in KZN, for instance. Others are amber, and some are red. And per province, Eastern Cape, for instance, the province anticipate to overspend by 470 million, or 11.1% on non-negotiables. Again, children vaccines remain the main area of concern, with an overspend of about 276% against the revised budget. And you'll see, like I said, it could be that because of those three factors, and equally the medical waste, 10 and ARV 7.2. So these are the three areas of overspending that we see. For Free State, the total budget sits at 1.9 billion, and they spent 1.4, and they will be underspent by 162 million. Like I said, they will be underspent. So this is one province where they will be underspending. So we already anticipate that in the area of non-negotiable, they will be underspending. But again, children's vaccines. That's why I said there's something about children's vaccines and medicines. And our reasons are that it could be a currency fluctuation factor, precisely because most of our vaccines are imported. For Gauteng, similarly, they'll spend 8.4 and projected overspend. Chair, like I said, this is just on non-negotiables. For instance, they'll underspend of essential equipment by 52%, on medical waste, 63%. Now, NHLS, 63%. Now, it cannot be that they underspend on NHLS, when actually NHLS, they have not been paying fully. So it's those things that we follow up on, and it's the basis on which we write letters. KZN equally, they'll be overspent by 703 million, or 8.2%,
And these over expenditures should be matched with what we said earlier about the increase in the allocations for goods and services and COE. So we've done that analysis. Equally, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and so on. So in a nutshell, Chair, if you look at the non-negotiables, it's a good indicator, and it's a very good monitoring tool, because for each province, on monthly basis, we can tell you what the status is on non-negotiables. And the CFO calls his counterparts and say, but can you check this area? What is happening? How come you are already in the red? Can you please check? So we've got those monitoring systems. How do we deal with that? How do we, you know, we raise them. We say these are the problems. We anticipate there's going to be a problem in this area. We anticipate that, you know, we are going to be overspent on ARVs. We write letters, but that's it. So what else beyond that can be done? And perhaps these are the kind of discussions you should have. But we've also come up with a much more positive story to say that there are savings that we've seen that are linked to the centralized tendering. On slide number 75, that for the 2015-16 financial year, the estimated savings that we saw, at least for 14-15 on ARVs, it was about 1.5 billion. This is just purely from negotiating pricing and also benchmarking exercises. And we've seen a saving of about 76 million across other tenders, again through the same kind of exercise. And Chair, I'm pleased to say that we've taken all the tenders, the transversal, and we're putting all of them under the office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Meaning at National Health Department, we will not be handling any transversal tenders whatsoever. However, what we will do, we will provide a technical team that will support the Chief Procurement Office. Meaning we will not do tenders, and we hope that it will be styled along the same lines as the old tender board where National Treasury does tenders. We come as technicians to provide advice and support and so on. So the minister has already approved, and I think Treasury, as of the 1st of April, will be taking over all transversal tenders, pharmaceuticals, equipment, everything. But we will continue to provide technical advice and support. So for the 14-15, like I said, we've been able to save 1.6 billion for solid dosage tender, and again, for the antiretrovirals, like I said, we've been able to achieve those savings. For management of personnel, I thought I needed also to mention that the impact of vacancies, it's a problem both at national or provincial level. All posts that are becoming vacant at national we will not fill, but it will obviously have implications for service delivery. And we've done an analysis. And the question is, do we stop certain services to fit within the budget cuts, or do we, you know, how best do we do this? So we've done that analysis, and we can provide that report to show those areas where we will not be filling a post that have been vacated. In the interim, we'll still ensure that we can utilize the existing resources optimally. So this is just a breakdown of our administrative versus technical posts. And we'd like a similar exercise to be done at provincial level to show what the ratio of admin versus technical is, the ratio of professional posts versus admin, meaning if you have more admin people and the actual technical people are not available, I mean, how is the work going to be performed? So we'd like to bring that logic back, because Treasury is also saying, please cut down on employing more clerks and more admin people, rather employ more doctors and nurses. So we'd like to see that breakdown in each province. We've done that analysis ourselves at National.
So for the planning or for the infrastructure, Chair, we've come up with a proposal of the development of a user asset management plan per province and infrastructure project management plan that should feed into the APP. So these provincial plans are funded through the equitable share and the health infrastructure grant. So what we did, Chair, we developed what we call the integrated program management plan, infrastructure plans, as well as the asset improvement plans. So these AIP, asset improvement plan, I have to ensure that I don't say acronyms, Chair, as you requested. We've done that also for the in-kind grant. So what we try to do, Chair, under slide 81, is to set up a monitoring process where we conduct a progress review meeting with implementing agents and also hold quarterly progress review meetings. So just on the in-kind grant plan, Chair, as of 8 March 2017, if you look at what was allocated, we had an allocation of 695 million, and of this, about 561 million has been spent. So we're still of the view that this will be spent fully because payments have been effected. But what we've done, Chair, we're not only tracking expenditure, we're tracking expenditure but also deliverables. I know, Chair, in the last meeting you asked the question, how come your expenditure does not match a deliverable performance? And I had made the point that it is not just the number of completed projects, it's also about projects with a multi-year planning. So we've given that to you with a breakdown, and I'll explain that because this is, it's a very important thing. So what we do, we show you those projects that have been handed over, those projects with practical completion, those that are under construction, and where construction is 1 to 25%, and where construction is 51 to 75%. If you go to slide 74, and then we can show you, 84, my apologies, I beg your pardon. So if you go for each one, then we can show you how much money we spend in each area. Because if you only count, Chair, those that have been handed over, it will only show you a small proportion of work that has been done. In the meantime, there's also work that is underway. For instance, practical completion, handed over, construction underway, construction progress, meaning per milestone, we can show you this is where we are with regard to this milestone, and this is the budget related to that. So this is why we're giving you this, so that we can see, and we can even give you a breakdown per province, to say in Eastern Cape, Free State, and so on. And we can see it's only in these, and we can even tell you what the status is. We've got it per project, and we can tell you who the implementing agent is, and the milestones reached, the number of facilities, and the project costs, as well as the accumulated expenditure as at 8 March, and then we can say period of completion. So we've done that so that we can give you a better explanation for each area, and you can actually link it back to the expenditure as well as projects. So, Chair, for the revise, if you allow me, 88, I'm still trying to make sure that I comply with the time allocated. For the health revise, the original budget was 5.2 billion, and the provincial rollovers 153 million. Adjusted budget was 5.4 billion, and the actual transfers were 5.27 billion. These are the original transfer, and so far expenditure has been 4.3 billion. So the budget available is 1 billion. As at 8th of March, and meaning this expenditure is at 80%. So some of the provinces have written us here to say within the grants, can we allow them to use the money elsewhere where they are, where the delivery is a concern? And we've approved some and we've rejected some. So as at end of this financial year, this spending will be different per province. So this is specifically for the provincial grants, and we show exactly in which areas, and we show you also to say which facilities and what kind of projects they were and what the status is. And this is on page 91 and page 92 up to 93. So, Chair, if you go per province, you will see the expenditure, the projects, and it's much easier to track and to follow. So with regard to any other matter, this one we're just showing you, Chair, Honourable Members, our planning cycle. We're informed by the Sustainable Development Goals, the National Development Plan, the Strategic Framework, and our Strategic Plan. So throughout when we plan, these are the guiding principles. But we also look at Treasury guidelines and the Department of Performance Monitoring guidelines. So we align those, and our plans are audited, Chair. Before they are finally signed off by the Minister, they are shared with the Auditor General as well as DPME. And they sign off on them, and we then finalize them. So meaning they are audited as plans, but we are also getting audited when we implement and when we write our annual report. So we are audited all the time. So, Chair, this is how we plan. I thought this would be sort of an example of how we do it. What we do, we send teams to every province, meaning they spend time, work with the provinces, meaning the provinces develop their APP with us. We work together. And based on that, we follow a particular process and a particular cycle. By the time we finalize our APP and the provinces, we've gone through all those processes, and we have to, on annual basis, agree on indicators and how we're going to collect the data and what the sources are. We do that repeatedly. But, of course, there will be, from time to time, non-compliance from some of the provinces, but not all. Some comply fully, others don't. We write letters. You know, we've got a robust system that's what, and this is just that an example in these few pages. Including legislation and prescripts, we remind them of provisions in PFMA, in the National Health Act. Unfortunately, Chair, the National Health Act prescribes that our planning must comply with the National Health Policy. It's written in the Act. But as to whether that compliance is full or not, it's not normally the case, but sometimes it is. But in fact, I'm instructed in law that the Director General must integrate health plans of the National Department and Provincial Departments annually and submit them to the National Health Council, meaning I have no option. It's required by law. So it's for that reason that the COO's office does that all the time. And this is in addition to the district plans. They do that as well, Chair. So on page 100, we show you this kind of alignment, how we do it, and the processes that follow. It flows from Cabinet Lekgotla, National Health Council, Program of Action that is communicated by DPME based on MTSF, but also we ensure that we follow the lines, we share with the AG, Treasury, and colleagues. And this is our annual performance plan, but also the format for annual performance plan of provincial departments. This is a format that we share with them that they must follow. Equally, the format and guidelines for district health plans. Now, all these are available, and you can access them. Chair, this is my few slides that we work very closely with DPME and National Treasury, but we follow this process of both top-down and bottom-up. It's a very interesting way of working. The bottom up is where we go from province to province and get their input. Top down is where we say these are policies that must be implemented, and we try to align both. It's a very delicate process, but we try. We try to ensure that we can achieve that. We've tried to provide leadership and ensure that the provinces understand the National Treasury framework and the strategic plans, as well as the APP. And, Chair, in conclusion, I'd like to thank colleagues, particularly my colleagues who are forever in provinces, trying to get them to align their plans. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm Walmart James. Thank you very much for that presentation. DG, you clearly have mastery of a very complicated portfolio because the complexities there from top to bottom require great understanding and some detailed knowledge. So thank you very much for that. But it seems to me the bottom line is the following, that that given population growth rates and given the shifting burden of disease, the amount of budget money set aside for health is inadequate. And that inadequacy is distributed unevenly across provinces. So that seems to be the bottom line. And that the result of that is that not only will we be unable to serve the health needs of the nation, it will get worse in the course of time unless something happens. So what can we do? So you could save, you can get greater efficiencies, you can control risks around corruption and wasted expenditure. And all those things should be done, clearly. But that's not going to solve the problem. What you have to do is increase the revenue. And so what's the options there? Taxation, and so on and so forth. So, but it seems like it's a massive problem, and it's a massive national problem, and some solution ought to be introduced. So I noticed that as part of your interventions, you are not looking at putting a different framework for a much better relationship with the private sector. Presently, the private sector, the relationship is not a good one, but, you know, we negotiated in 1994 between adversaries, and I don't think the private sector is an adversary, but there are massive problems between the two, and clearly the national department has to engage with the private sector rather than just, you know, hit out at it. So you need an engagement. Because we're facing two problems. There's a demarcation agreement coming up, which eliminates health insurance, not medical aid, over a period of 1 year. And I think that's the problem. So it's a flag that needs to be reviewed and revisited. And secondly, we should get really clever. Why didn't we have a national tender process for private sector medical, for private sector health companies to manage hospitals and run them? And so on and so forth. So I think that we're sitting here in the single room looking for solutions, and we must not exclude working together with the private sector to find solutions. I just want to flag that. But here's just my question. Can you tell us in one sentence, given the norms that you've set and the targets that you set for health as non-negotiables, what's the quantum of money that you are short for the year coming ahead and for the 3 years over the next period leading up to 2019-2020? What's the quantum of our crisis in a simple sentence?
Thank you, Chair. DG, thank you for that presentation. DG, I have a concern with all what you have presented to us, these fantastic proposals, these mechanisms you're putting in place. When we as the portfolio committees go on site, what we see is something else. And the sad thing about it is we start hearing things from the media all over. So clearly this monitoring and evaluation is not working. All these oversight committees we've got is not working. We talk about compensation to employees where we're not going to have enough money to get more and more. I don't know if employees are the solution anymore, because with every mechanism it's not working. Be honest with you, let me tell you like it is. We have gone physically and we have seen the challenges on the ground. We'll have MECs and with due respect, and they'll sit down to you, they'll tell you the best of things they're doing and how it is working. You go down 3 kilometers down the road, it's not working. Your Mum Connect is one example. We were told it's working. We go there, not a single soul knew about it. So, you know, I think we've got a lot more problem than just money in terms of trying to resolve the issues we got. If you take the problem with your clinical associates, they've been totally ignored, yet you need them so much to work in the rural areas to such an extent that I've now been told the UK is poaching them and taking them away. So we wouldn't even have them. Even in the University of Pretoria, which is, I think, the one that started this, and they are leaving from there. Lecturers and all are disappearing and they're going away. So I think we're reaching a crisis point at some stage. And I don't believe it is only the money or the resources that is going to make it. I think there must be greater commitment. Now, the question that arises is, it seems like that we all are working in silos. Provinces are doing their own thing. National has no control over them, cannot control them, does not have the mandate to deal with them. That seems to be the crux of the problem the way we see it. And that's why we hear about things at the last minute that are a problem. If you talk about the budgeting processes as well, you say you're meeting 4 times a year. You meet the provinces and things. Who is checking what is coming from the ground, the needs of the people in terms of the district? Because the districts are repeatedly complaining. Not enough resources are even reaching them. That is what they are saying. The provinces, when it is allocated, they take total control, they budget and do what they have to do, so it's not really reaching the people on the ground. If you look at the amount of money we are actually setting aside just for compensation of employees, and what you're talking about, the needs, further needs we need to address them, you can look at the massive problem we got in terms of resources. So I think I must agree with my colleague, we need to find some other solution as to where you're going to get that, but better manage what we got, because we seem to have a serious problem there. I've got about 30 some odd questions here, but I've tried to cut it down, but I'm it's an unfortunate... yeah. You know, I'm going to go to the last one. Yeah, I'll go to the last one and I'll cut it here. On page 91... Chair, I'll accept that, even though I must tell you that, you know, 55 million people's lives here in an hour and 45 minutes with the crucial is going to be very difficult. But I just want to go back to page 91 in your presentation. I don't know if I'm not reading this thing correctly. We're talking about the provinces here in terms of this replacement and revitalization projects and things like that. We talk about money that has been budgeted for 2016-17. We talk about the money that is being spent. But what is confusing for me, I'm reading here, you're talking about some of these projects are still in the designing phase and some of them are still in construction. The monies are all spent here. I don't know if I'm confused on page 91. If you look at these provinces, if you talk Western Cape, there's 23, Northwest, there's 8, Northern Cape 10. Some of them are still in planning stages, it says. Some is contracted. But in terms of here, you budgeted for 2016-17, you budgeted 51 million, you spent 51 million. If you spent 100, you budgeted 105 million in the Western Cape, you spent 104 million we're talking about. So I'm a little bit confused, you know, in terms of that. This seems to be the money is gone, it's spent, and what are we doing? Unless I've got it wrong, I don't know. Let me stop there, Chair, and we'll come on the second round.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The department in slide 5 talk about benchmarking because as the spending committee on appropriation, we have been hearing that the challenges, most of the challenges are coming from the provinces. But we want to check now because you said you benchmark, you meet and so on. Has there been any discussion around addressing the wage bill during these interactions? Because seemingly it's like these are common problems in all the provinces. If you can share with us on that one. And also I want to check what has been the tangible outcomes of these interactions that has taken place between individual provinces. And lastly, Chair, I want to check on the standardized, no. I want to check it's the indication on slide number 11 shows that most of the money goes to the districts. What I want to check, does the department have the monitoring and oversight mechanisms that are in place by both national and provincial health departments to ensure that these allocations are spent according to plans and yield value for money? That's what we want to check. I will stop there. I've got more, like 40, but because of these three.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. First, DG, I just would like to make a comment to say that I see that you are motivating for the department, like other departments also do. They will have some things, but one would then ask, what really would inform the increase? I agree with you. Health is underfunded, but like everybody else, and I think we all know that everyone has got to do more with less in view of the economy now. But what concerns me is that there's a lot of underspending as well, which would be a minus or a negative thing against the department, because you see a lot of underspending, which you yourself have presented, say, what are the challenges? Why is there so much underspending in other areas? Because that alone, you know, say something. Because if you keep pumping money there, and some of the money is not spent, whilst on the other hand, in other areas there is a lot of overspending. When you spoke about the non-negotiables, you mentioned medicines and also food supplies, but I saw quite a lot of underspending on food supply, so that puts one in an awkward position. In terms of compensation, again, I think my colleague has mentioned that as well, that compensation of employees, there are challenges there. I also know that there are, I mean, shortage of personnel in different ways, but as we all know, we are supposed to prioritize the critical posts. Are you indicating that maybe some of the critical, we are not able, or provinces perhaps are not able to fill even the critical posts? Because if that is the case, then we have a serious problem. Because provinces should be allowed to fill critical posts, and those posts that are not critical then would be the ones that you actually would want to exclude. I have a lot, but I will just ask maybe one more question. Sorry, in terms of Or maybe the other thing that I should just ask while I'm looking is you mentioned the fact that in as much as there's an increase on goods and services, you may need to use the money for compensation. Is that a bad thing to use some of the money if the department is not actually going to use, because there's a lot of underspending on goods and services as well? I will end the chat. Thanks. I'll ask in the next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first two is not persons. I'm pleading with you, DG. You know, they're working in silos. That is a big problem in government. You know, I was shocked when you talked of word perfect. I was using that in 1984. And you still have a province that is on word. How cost effective is that? I just plead with you to take control of the department and make sure that there's nobody on work perfect, please. And then the other one is, you know, in 1993, when we're preparing to come to govern, Mam Sisulu asked one thing from the younger girls, it was ourselves, that when you go to parliament, doesn't matter in what portfolio, you must make sure that the woman is protected. You know, in 2007, when I chaired the portfolio committee on health, I discovered that there is a lot of questions. I don't know whether it's questions of that nurses in clinics have to fill. And I thought that thing has been dealt with. And up to now, those nurses are still going through that ordeal, and it is simply because it is women in the nursing profession. If it was doctors, I think you would have long dealt with that one. So I just ask you to make sure that you protect the women in your department. Simplify that form. The districts, I'm not sure what these districts are doing. The districts, please, you don't have to answer me today, don't waste time. Just write me two pages on how much you love the districts and why we should not do away with them. These honorable members, honorable DG, myself and all, including honorable James, we are an endangered species. We will only come back here if we are seen to do work. But so far you have said a lot of things that you are doing. Whether you are wrong or right, you are doing something. But our job is to make sure that you don't commit mistakes. So go and list all the provinces that are sinners. Bring that list and don't give us a long protective speech. Just say Western Cape is wrong in this, Limpopo is wrong. We'll deal with that so that we can come back to Parliament again. Otherwise, we have no chance.
Honourable Member Shokas Tole, why do you think we invited the AG here? That was on a lighter note. Next one.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank the DG for the presentation. I wanted to check DG with regard the provinces that are below 6% growth, and you also have indicated that in that state they might not even be able to fill vacant positions. My question is what are the plans in place to ensure that they get assisted? Because if they are not to be in a position where they can appoint, then one will say, what is the state of health in that particular province? Just a very serious challenge. The other issue is with regard to you have mentioned that of all the provinces, only Mpumalanga and the Northwest have increased their budget. then one will want to know of the rest, because but we are talking while some are not with us here. I'm just raising it that if they are to come and give their presentations, they must also look at these questions as to why are they not increasing their budgets. Does it mean that or is of their feeling that previously they've done better of things that we do not see when we are on oversight? What informs them not to increase their budget on health? And I think I wanted to say that we are talking to those that are not here. When they arrive in their presentation, we'll expect them at least to touch some on this. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Honourable Member, over here.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And
your mic, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks, DG, for the report. Somewhere you said we write letters, and it ends up there. Nothing is being done. My question is, this is a missing link. If you could have got a response of the letters that you write to the provinces, that would also help you in writing the honesty about the situations as it is reflected in provinces. What is it that you have in plan to make sure that there is responses to the letters that you write? And I don't know whether it's the right platform, but if it's possible, I had a report from, what is this hospital, Abraham Esau Hospital, AEH in Canvania, which has a very disturbing situation, and they said as from the 1st of April 2017, they will be left only with two doctors. So it's a very serious situation here, which needs to be attended, because it says what is going to happen to the patients then. And if it's possible, maybe a site visit can be arranged specifically to this hospital. Thank you.
It's a crisis situation. I had about 2,000 doctors from Cuba. So now you know which hospital to prioritize in terms of deployment. Okay. The chair would also like to come up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. But before that, we have been joined by two other members, which the other one has spoken already. And we have also, they will have to introduce themselves so that they are known. We are also being joined by Treasury, MEC of Treasury from the Eastern Cape. Obviously, Velikai, I will have to... So they will have to, before I ask questions, I'll request them to introduce themselves using the mic. Nehlekwayo and Mama Nana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology for arriving late. I'm Sibongile Manana, member of the Appropriations Standing Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for arriving late. I'm Susan Tembekwayo, member of Health.
Oh, sorry.
My apology.
Does not make a mistake.
Well, thank you very much. My apologies. I'm Sakum Sisomyo from the Eastern Cape, the MEC for Treasury. Support Mr. Mazosiwa, who's working in my office.
No, thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Ndaba Tswabaza, member of the Appropriations Committee.
and WHIP. My apology for arriving late, transport issues.
No, thank you. Thank you, DG. Just three short questions. It's my understanding that when we conduct oversight, we present reports to Parliament, and then the findings, the recommendations of those reports from various provinces are sent to the department. In the challenges that are there, some of them we've identified, is there any process when you are then monitoring provinces? Do you follow that up? I think I've been addressed by Honorable Shope. Don't be general. Shope. Please don't be generous, ma'am. Who are these provinces? Which are these provinces that are not complying? Name them. Remember that as health, we are going to conduct an oversight, and we don't want to come to a province and be all over, when in fact we know where the challenge is. The other one, in the revitalization slide, they are on identified, ongoing, on construction. Do you have in your monitoring system, strategy, do you have a system where, how long is it going to be on design? Our experience is that it stays on design until the end of the term. How long is it ongoing? And those that are on construction, do you monitor and check if that construction is being being conducted according to specifications? Because we have conducted oversights, we have seen horrible, as Honorable Imam Sheikh has said, a different story to what is on paper. So we want to check, do you have a we're quite aware that you may be having some challenges, and I pity you as the National Department of Health, because provinces, you say this, they do what they think it suits them. But we have got a responsibility ourselves as members of Parliament, as portfolio committee. I think the Honourable Member have said it, and I want to labour on that. It is unacceptable for political heads not to be in this meeting. I'm raising it because we conduct oversight, and it is quite scary. So when they are not here, because we're going to ask Eastern Cape something now, when it's their turn, because we have been there, we saw what happened, we want them. So when you are raising some of these issues, I will know, I don't know what was then the brief. Maybe on our side, we would really like in some areas to become more detailed rather than being general. I think for me, those are the few others I have been addressed by other members.
Up on your infrastructure development, you've got project management. But then what I have found is that under project management, we then leave out your contract management, which is where I think the devil lies. Contract management, if you can talk to that. And then I know that in your presentation, you touched on infrastructure, you touched on HR. I haven't heard you talk about equipment, because I think there's a problem of hospitals that do not have equipment, or they have old equipment, or they have equipment that the staff cannot use. That also, I think, it does aggravate the problem. So if you can just touch on the equipment. And also, if you could explain to us, what your core business is policy development. Do you have any outstanding policies? And which are those, and how long is it going to take you to complete those policies? Because they must be implemented like yesterday. All right. I think we're going to allow you to respond with your team.
This to me is just it's a comment on the funding of accrual. That's a serious violation of the PFMA. There's no clause that says people must fund accrual. Actually, says you've got to improve on efficiencies so that you can use this year's financial budget in this financial year. Because once it overlaps and then you have to pay for or fund accruals, it means you will use budget that was used, was allocated for the next financial year to fund projects of the previous financial year, which is a situation that is not supposed to happen. It's in serious violation of the... And then you talk about over expenditure and under expenditure. In terms of the PFMA, that's an offense. You don't want to wait until an example, you know, is made by taking the Department of Health to court. Only then we start to correct. So it should not be tolerated. Actually, the treasuries at a provincial level are supposed to make sure that this does not happen. That's their monitoring there. They must show zero tolerance. There must not be accruals. And they must also, the budget must be used for what it was planned for. Your APP, for what it was planned for. All right. No, thank you very much, DG. We will now hand over to you and your team to provide responses.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me say that to all honorable members, the reality is that we have to make a decision about whether health is delivered in this country or not. And perhaps to be more blunt, what Honorable James said is that indeed we have an increase in the burden of disease. It's a reality. And we have what I describe as colliding epidemics. Colliding epidemics of HIV, AIDS, TB, and NCDs. Meaning your hypertension, diabetes, cancer are increasing, whilst your HIV, AIDS, and TB are not going down. So it's a colliding epidemic. So it's a reality. So you're going to have to decide that we fund that or we just bury our heads in the sand. And that's a reality. And our ability to respond is in responding to this is that we must have a performing health system. A performing health system requires that as you respond, because remember you are keeping most of your people alive. Those people who had HIV and AIDS are living longer. Our health life expectancy has increased. Now people are living longer, but they are not healthy. They still have to be treated. They still have to be looked after. With the increase in life expectancy, it means that you have more people who seek care. But the one factor I have not provided for is your migration problem in South Africa. We've got a lot of people who cross borders to seek care. It's a reality. They move from Zimbabwe, they move from Mozambique to seek care in South Africa. It's a reality. Now, when you plan and when you look at these figures that StatsSA gives us, StatsSA figures does not factor in migration. It doesn't. Your budget is based on these numbers, but we've got far more than the health sector can cope. So that's the reality. I'm not presenting here a motivation for health. I am presenting here the crisis that we have in this country about health. It's a reality. It's either we're going to pretend that it's business as normal and not deal with this decisively. And indeed, there's no country in the world, Honorable James, no country that I know of. I've done an analysis of all countries' health financing systems. And I can tell you, there are two approaches, the way you finance health and the way you provide health services. And in the manner in which health is financed, you have a combination of public and private financing. And in the manner in which services are rendered, again, you have
a combination of public and private. There's no system in the world. Even in Cuba, Chair, when you are a foreigner in Cuba, you don't access their services. You come with private insurance. I'm just saying there's no system in the world. UK with its NHS, they still have private insurance. Their GPs are contracted, meaning you have a combination of both. So either in South Africa we're going to pretend that there's only one sector or not the other, but the reality is that there's no such system anywhere in the world. The question is, how do you configure both in such a way that you can get the best care possible? And this is where, Chair, I would say, in response to say what are the outstanding policies, there's just one, National Health Insurance. And if in implementing NHI, Honorable James, we can configure both the role of public-private in the manner in which health is financed and the manner in which services are provided, then we'd have achieved our goals. And I think this is where NHI should go, and I would like to say that. You asked the question about what is the quantum. The quantum, I mean, to be honest, if we were to work on the basis of the 8.5% growth, the quantum actually is 11.4 billion underfunding in health for 2017 to 2020. And for the 2017-18, it's 3.2 billion. For 2018-19, it's 2.9 billion. And for 19-20, it's 5.2. So for the MTES cycle, that would be how much you'd need to fill that gap. If you want more employees and so on. So the question, I think, perhaps that we should ask ourselves, given that our cost of employment is at 66%, if it's already at 66%, if you increase it beyond and it's at 70, it means you have very little money for activities and for goods and services, and it doesn't make sense. So the question is, how can we configure this in such a way that we access some services from some health workers, you know, in a creative way? And these are some of the things we can share. I think perhaps without preempting what will be in the National Health Insurance, I'll say these are some of the ideas you can think of. The demarcation problem, I'll ask Dr. Pillay to respond to that. The national tender for private sector, you know, Honorable James, I'm sorry to take us back, 1995-96. If you look at the bill that was presented in Parliament then, the amended to the Medicines Act, it had these provisions. We had these provisions whereby we say the private sector could actually procure through the national tender so that it could reduce costs in the private sector, because it's a logical way to go. But it had such a backlash. I mean, one, the U.S. threatened to have a Section 403 list, and they threatened sanctions. So it was a very sensitive issue, and those provisions were withdrawn. Now, I don't know in this era whether that can be piloted again, but it would require that we engage all stakeholders and sectors. But I thought I needed to say this was attempted before, but it's logical. And I think it will contribute significantly to the costs in the private sector. It makes perfect sense. Honorable Imam, yes, I agree with you about the problems in the provinces, but then the question is, who should be solving these problems? And Honorable Chair, you've rightly said what the role of national is. We've come up with tools, monitoring tools. We send teams, we meet, we talk. But where should the blame be? And I don't even think it helps, really. The question we should be answering is, the manner in which health is financed, the manner in which services are delivered, is it the right model? Or should we be changing the way health is run in this country? Unless we deal with that problem, we'll forever meet here, complain, and raise points and point fingers. I don't think it will help us. Clinical associates, Chair, I'll tell you again. I'll tell you, clinical associates, pharmacy technicians, all these middle-level workers, if you start training and you have not come up with a plan, this will happen. You'll train people. It's the same as a basic ambulance assistance. you train people in huge numbers and create unemployment for them. And it's unfair. It's so unfair. You can't plan health around. You start universities, they start training, and then they tell you who to employ, how to employ. You should first start by telling them this is what is needed in the health sector. And it's the basis on which they train. I think it's been the other way around. But with the clinical associates, we found a way on how best. They were supposed to have been appointed in districts. So the question is, are they being appointed in districts? And perhaps a province we can ask. Where are your clinical associates? Are they appointed in districts? Cubans, when they come back, because they are our experts in primary health care, they should be in our primary health care facilities. We should ask, are they employed in primary health care facilities? Ask those questions and find out whether is that the case. And those are just logical things, really, that we should be doing. Honorable members, I mean, the Constitution is clear about intergovernmental relations. We cannot do anything against what is provided for in the Constitution. Even with the concurrent functions, we stop where the provisions relate to health. And we also, even in the National Health Act, we've got clear provisions. What the role of national is, what the role of the provinces, what the role of the district is. And honorable member asked as to whether, you know, do we need districts? I think we do, actually. The fact that they were badly run, I think should not actually end up with us saying we don't need them. As I speak now, in this country, districts run like postal services. It's a fact. The health districts run like postal services. So we probably need to change that model as well. And I'm sorry I'll be blunt, because I think this is the base on which national health insurance will function and will run. If we change that district model, not to have them as postal services, but real delivery models and a platform for delivering health services. I have to make sure that I respond to all members. Is it Honorable Madlopa or Honorable Khoza? Madlopa. Benchmarking and the wage bill. Yes, we do engage. In fact, every province has come up with what I call a planning tool. Every time we say, tell us, what is your budget? What are your vacant posts? But we go further to say, how many people have you invested in terms of your bursaries? How many have you paid for in Cuba? How many have you recruited? How many posts are available? So that template that we've come up with, it's a matrix. Every province has a matrix. We did that because we want them on an ongoing basis to follow up. Community service, interns, everything. Everyone has a matrix. We agreed on that. It must help them monitor. At any point in time, they should refer to that matrix, actually. Because we said, perhaps you should check whether you should continue to pay for bursaries. Rather use that money to employ. Because it doesn't help to pay for bursaries when nurses complete. You can't employ them. Because they have to serve their contractual obligations. And the same as doctors. I think it's an ongoing discussion that we have. But each one has a matrix. Money allocation to districts and monitoring. Like I said, it's not enough just to have plans and so on. We want far more empowered districts with authority to be able to work and intervene when necessary, but also deliver services. Honorable Mukwanyana, I'm actually not motivating for health. I'm showing you the crisis that this country is facing. It will be a sad day, actually, that because, I mean, a country that cannot provide proper health for its people cannot even be considered a developed country. It doesn't matter what beautiful buildings we have. We have state-of-the-art facilities. They are running vacant. We could not even open two of our hospitals in Free State. Two. State-of-the-art. How does it help the people of that province? I can count beautiful state-of-the-art facilities. But if we just keep on having beautiful infrastructure, but we don't have health workers to render services. And it's actually in the AG's report. It's in the AG's report. But then it's probably something is terribly wrong. And Chair, I've said it in this meeting, and I'll say it again. In my opinion, I think we should stop building new facilities. Use the money to maintain what exists. You have a lot of the health infrastructure. It has actually gone up from 300, the health estate has gone up from 350 billion. It's probably now approaching 400 billion. Now, we should be investing in maintaining that infrastructure. It's like having a beautiful house that you don't look after. And I'm saying, let's look after this estate. And rather, instead of building more and more and more, use the money to look after what exists. And I've appealed and I'll repeat, and I've said it to Treasury also. Let's look after this estate and ensure that we can render services. The under expenditure, what I was trying to do with presenting the under expenditure, I'm actually showing you which province is underspending where. We've come up with this tool on non-negotiables precisely to help provinces to monitor where they are underspending and where they are overspending. Now, when a province underspends on food, perhaps the question you should ask is what type of food are they buying? Because in one province, they were not buying appropriate food for the diabetics. They were buying vors and pap. Now, you will not give a diabetic patient in a hospital vors and pap. So I would actually ask you to interrogate. If they underspend, what are they buying? What type of food are they buying? Pap and vors. And he said, no, it cannot be. So what we've done to try and help is to come up with a guideline on the type of food they should serve in hospitals. And we're hoping that they will comply because, you know, it cannot be. And we've done the same for schools and ECDs to say that they must buy appropriate food that has nutrition. Compensation challenges, yes, indeed. The compensation challenges and shortages of personnel and prioritization of critical posts, yes, it is a problem. It's actually what we're highlighting, that some of the provinces are not going to be able to appoint critical posts because of these constraints. On the goods and services, what I was saying is that some of them tend to compensate. The way some of the provinces do it is that they then employ, you know, when you can use COE, cost of employment, and then you then employ people as contract employees through agencies. It's sort of what others have been doing. And I can use an example. In Gauteng, they were using bus, isn't it, to employ community health workers as vendors. You see, now it means it's employees, but you bypass the process through employing them as vendors. But they're actually not vendors. They're employed. And even though you give them a stipend. So those are sort of the practices that we have to resolve and address. Honorable Shope, well, we try to integrate and align to deal with these silos. And I can assure you, you know, protecting women, I think, is our priority. If only Parliament can agree, this committee, that every province must implement those patient folders, they will cut down those 52 registers that are being implemented. Every province must implement this. Every province must start ensuring that they've got a proper filing cabinet. I'll tell you why we need that. The files get stolen, they are used by lawyers to litigate. Now, to just have a proper record, to have a proper filing system, it's good administration, but it will also prevent other problems. I mean, if you calculate how much is spent on litigation, it can be solved. Just these basic things need to be in place, and these are the things we are appealing for each province. Honorable Khoza, yes. that 6% growth may not be able to fill the gap. Yes, it's true. It's a reality. You are not going to be able to fill the gap. And this is the analysis we did just to share this with you. And perhaps we need to get into conversation with provinces and treasury. But what we wanted is not just about increasing the budget. We want to see a breakdown per administration versus professional post, meaning your doctors versus admin, and then your provincial office, because we think it's most of the provincial offices are top-heavy. So they need to scale down and then send people down to render services. So we need that kind of exercise, and maybe provinces can engage in that. Mpumalanga and Northwest, yes, indeed, they've increased, and others haven't. What has informed why? I think the provinces will probably tell you that the cuts have been from the provincial treasurer. I guess that conversation will happen during the course of this session for these 3 days. Honorable Shachwayon, I just have to make sure. Honorable Shachwayon, the letters, yes, I do. Pardon? Tembekwayo, my apologies, ma'am. The idea of writing letters is just to inform them that this is the status in your province. This supplier has not been paid so that they can deal with the problem. I don't think there is much we can do, and I think from our side we provide support, we engage, but I still think that HODs have a responsibility also to do their work. I'm worried about this, and this may not be the only hospital that you refer to where they will be without doctors. We will ask our facilities. In fact, the minister appointed a task team. They've done an analysis in 6 provinces, and I can tell you the problems are the same. So at some stage, maybe the minister will come and brief you about his findings and what is it that we think needs to be done. We finished 6. The only 3 that were not done were Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape, but we will follow up with those as well. To the Honorable Chair, the oversight recommendations, yes, actually what we've also done, Chair, even with the recommendations of this committee and the recommendations of, we sit down, we look at every single area, and we share it for every single DDG in the department. They follow up on the areas that have been identified per province, and we follow up, meaning we've got a systematic way. If you want, we can even share this report that we prepared for every area. We then get the minister to write the speaker. We can share the report with you, especially this one that was raised by the committee. The revised monitoring system. In fact, what we have, we not only have a monitoring system, it's quite detailed. We can show you. But we also have inspection reports per project. So for each project, we send out inspectors, because for the very reason that you've raised. Because we also are not happy with just a report being sent to us. We go back and verify. We call them site inspections. So we have pay facility. We can share them with you, Chair, if you want. Contract management. I think it's a weakness in each area, and perhaps maybe the CFO can just share how the forum of CFOs has tried to deal with this, but I still think it's a weak area that needs strengthening, I must admit. With regard to equipment, Chair, we came up with what we call the essential equipment list that every province must implement, meaning even if you don't have money for any equipment, but at least all essential equipment must be available. But as to what extent they comply with the essential equipment list, I think it's what we have to establish. That is one. 2, I said earlier, Chair, that the Chief Procurement Officer, we started a very rigorous process on how equipment should be procured. Equipment, linen, waste management, laundry and security services. And food, five. We categorize those five. Now, I was saying to the colleagues, as of next year, we must start implementation. It must apply across the whole of the health sector. But it will be driven by the chief procurement officer. I think because we are doing this in partnership with them, you can actually invite them to come and present. I don't know if they'll be ready. I think so. I think they are ready. They can come and present. This is the new model of procurement for those areas. Because our view is that if we follow that approach, we'll achieve huge savings for the country. We'll cut a lot of wastage. For the policies, Chair, most of the policies, I think, need implementation. We are oversubscribed with policies. And my worry is that as we develop policies, sometimes when new things come, we may even reverse those that are still good policies. The one that will really, really consolidate everything is national health insurance. I think that's the key policy area that is outstanding and is important. Accruals, I was highlighting this so that you need to perhaps discuss that with each one. But for us, it's not a problem, but perhaps per province, you probably need to engage and interrogate accruals, but also look at how solutions can be found, because I also think it's a big area of concern for provinces. It comes up every time when we meet and when we discuss. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I'm looking at the time. We were supposed to have started with our second presentation, but honorable members, I'm sure you are happy with the responses. The only thing that I will allow now is follow-up questions. Now, we've got this other avenue for your questions. You can always write to the minister and ask questions for a written response or for oral response to the House. So I'm trying to say I'm not completely shutting you. We just have got time constraints. Honourable Member, I think if you can introduce yourself, you came late, and thereafter we take follow-up questions and we close. Ne? This is very interesting. Actually, you can see from the interaction that we needed even more time with you alone. But unfortunately, no members will not be here on Saturday to do their work on Saturday. So that's why we must finish this work between now and Friday. All right. Honourable Member, if you can introduce yourself and then I'll take follow-up questions.
Thanks, Chair. Apologies for being late. South African Airways let me down again. My name is Malcolm Figg. I'm a member of the committee.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. The follow-up questions? Number one, please remember yourself. One, two, Madope, three, four, Honourable Member Manana, five, Honourable Member Nukwanyana, six, Honourable Member McLaughlin, seven, Honourable Member James, eight, Honourable Member Shoppes-Tole, and then you also want to come in. Okay. The chairperson will be the last one on the follow-up questions. I repeat, follow-up questions. Number one.
Thank you, Chair. I think we want to fix the health system. That's what we are here for, to find solutions, how to fix it. But I think it is a faulty, what we call, it's a faulty way of thinking to see that things is not, something is not working and keep on thinking it will come out right, it will work. We have a public health system, we have a private health system, we have a national health system, we have a provincial health system, and all this don't work. And there are certain ministries I think we should have one competency, not concurrent competencies. One of them is health and the other one is education. There is just no way, And we know very well that the greatest cause of all this ill health is poverty. We are talking about how to fix people who are sick. But we don't see how we can stop them from getting sick. And poverty is the greatest cause of all these things. No one mentioned poverty here. We talk about medicine, how to get better medicine, how to procure better medicine, and how to take people to private hospitals, how to get private people to help in private. Why don't we make one health? NHI, I think, is the route to go, if we can hasten that. And it's no use training 101 nurses when we have 100 vacancies. What are we going to do with the other one? So we just train. We don't train for the sake of the need. And that's why we spend a lot of money. We train people who can't be used and they become a problem, frustrated. So maybe we need to rethink about the whole thing and how to resolve, not how to fix it. Thank you.
If I understand you correctly, it's a comment. Yes, thank you very much.
No,
Honorable Member.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. No, mine, I did not hear the response on the tangible outcomes of these interactions between national and the provinces, whether it's improving or it's not improving. Lastly, Chair, it's about the slide number 75, savings linked to centralized tendering. I want to check, you said you shall be taking all the tender work to the CPO. What does it mean to the SPM unit that you have now? Because it's like you'll be helping, you'll be just giving support to the CPO. But what will happen to the SPM unit? Because it means to say that they are no more going to perform the function as they have been created. Most of the work will be taken outside. Does it mean retrenchment or what? Thanks.
Thank you. Number three.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think the first one is my question was not answered, DG, through the Chair, on that page 91, where I found that there was a whole lot of amount budgeted for 2016-2017, but the expenditure seems to be in line with that, but the work is still in construction and some is still in the planning phase. But, okay, Chair, the other thing is this. DG, you've acknowledged that there's a serious challenge in the country in terms of our resources, in terms of our funding. And I think the Minister also acknowledged that when he said that we have a good private healthcare center, but the funding model, which is, I think, UK-based, is a serious problem for us in the country. Now, I must emphasize that a lot of our medical practitioners and experts in the medical field that are even these private institutions, they don't make the money. The hospitals are making the money because I think they're just one or two. Would you then not think that together with NHI that we should try and have a public-private partnership with hospital medical professionals to set up private medical institutions, not where the monies are being made by certain conglomerates and monopolistic capitalists and things, but more in the interest of our people, so that we can get together with these people and set up medical centers all over and let it be a public-private partnership. Maybe that can alleviate the problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, DG mentioned in slide 18 the decline of personnel due to cost containment. Before we passed the division of revenue last week, we had some public participation, and one of the organizations that raised this issue very seriously is among us. Here is the Rural Health Advocacy Project, where they raised their concern that due to this decline of personnel, due to the cost containment, rural provinces are suffering, and they wanted to know whether there are any mechanism to monitor, especially in the rural areas, what consequences are there with regards to this decision that makes the service delivery to suffer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Member Manana, next. research. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. It's actually more of a follow-up in terms of the accruals. Just for interest, to find out how huge is this problem of accruals, because I know the question was asked, because it's one of the things that impact on the new budget across departments, not just the health department. It depends on the new budget, and is it because people don't pay because they don't have the money, or people are trying to avoid having unauthorized expenditure in the previous financial year? Just for interest sake, thanks.
Thank you. Next, Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These aren't follow-up questions because I didn't ask any questions the first time round. I thought you were going to give us a second round. Just some clarity-seeking questions, sir, if I may. We're told that most of our vaccines are imported. That this may actually refer to the question that you answered from Dr. James earlier. But I just wanted to know, is there no way we can change that? Is there no local markets? Do we not spend any money as the Department of Health in development on this kind of thing to change that? Because rather than pay our money out to the country, why don't we spend it internally? Then I just wanted to ask, in terms of, as an example, on slide 68, find it. This is dealing with Gauteng. You say here, projected to overspend by 562.4 million or 5.7% of the total revised budget, and then you say the overspending items caused by payment of accruals due to cash flow management, etc. And then in the next bullet point you say underspent on essential equipment, 52.2%, medical waste 53.6%. Are these percentages given here what you did spend out of the budget for those individual things, or what you didn't spend on the budget for those individual things? Because it doesn't seem to add up to me somehow. Infection control, 70%. Did they not spend 70% of their budget on budget control? And yet, in total, they overspent. I'm just trying to tie up how this works. Maybe you can just give an explanation. It relates to the others as well. The other slides have a similar sort of supposed anomaly. And then slide 74, I think it was. It might be a similar thing. Yeah, sorry, that's the same item again. I just wanted to ask as well, you mentioned here about the acquisition of ambulances and an ambulance fleet. My understanding generally is that's usually left to the likes of district municipalities and so on. Are you funding district municipalities in order to do that? Is there some kind of a scheme going on, or do you have a national fleet of ambulances that are then sort of deployed in various areas? I'd just like some understanding on that. And then lastly, we're spending a lot of money on infrastructure, building hospitals, clinics, whatever it might be. Once those are completed, do they belong to the Department of Health or the Department of Public Works? And if so, where does the maintenance responsibility lie? Because I don't see anything in here about maintenance. I know Treasury expects municipalities to maintain their assets at the rate of 8% of the net value of those assets. Do you have a similar obligation in Department of Health on your infrastructure assets, or is it left to Public Works? If you could just help me there. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just a comment, and I was part of the second track negotiations of our constitutional design, and the reason why it's concurrent responsibility in education and health was to be sensitive to local and regional circumstance, and that's why it was introduced in that way. But it's been 20 years since, and perhaps we should review it. But in reviewing it, just consider the following. It's not to be dogmatic about it, because it doesn't work in relation to certain regions, and it works in relation to other regions. And the most difficult regions are the ones that used to have homelands before. That's the inheritance. And it's a real problem. I can see it. So it may be that we need to review that relationship, but still be sensitive and have a flexible system so that when it comes to certain provinces or certain regions, there's much greater local autonomy than in other areas. Just to say that. Because of the constitutional change, the major one, is going to take
a certain threshold in Parliament to get this through. I mean, it's, and to get through the threshold will not take one party. It's just to say that. It's a major issue. My questions is, I just have two questions, is whether the returning Cuban doctors have been trained in HIV-TB medicine. A burden of disease is HIV-TB, and are they skilled to do that? Never mind the problem with having a Spanish bedside manner now. But I mean, we can do with all the help we can get in terms of having doctors trained, but they need to be trained in a burden of disease, and the question is, are they? And my second question is, when can we expect a national health insurance bill, please? I mean, we don't agree with it as a party, but you need an act to get the thing going, and we've been waiting forever. When is it coming?
See, when we sit in this platform, we're talking, this is an engineer group, so we work hard. The other things, we'll discuss them in the house. Whether you agree or you don't agree in the house. But here, let's engineer. It will be in the best interest, the people of this country and the country itself. All right. You can continue in that manner. Was your hand up? No. Okay. Now, with your permission, eh? Before we can, or maybe I should allow you. Okay, the chair would also want to make a
No, I think I've been slightly covered by Honorable James because my question was going to be, is it not about time that as the department, the National Department of Health, you sit down and had an audit or look into what has been the impact of homeland systems in terms of the Department of Health vis-a-vis where we are now. I'm raising this because I know for a fact in the Eastern Cape we have inherited systems. We have inherited health workers from three different systems or two, which some of them maybe created a problem for the government of the Eastern Cape because of the regime at that particular time. But what has then been the impact of that? Because if we don't do that exercise within the context of doing things differently, and I believe we'd never been able to achieve the radical economic transformation if we don't look into these core things and ask different questions. Secondly, what has been the view of Treasury? I agree you are not here to advocate for money, but there is one MEC who said to us last week, if there is anybody who wants to save money, must not come to the Department of Health. Huh? I'll tell you outside which province is that. And it is true, I'm happy that Treasury is here. It is true. Health is not about robots providing services. Health needs warm bodies. Warm bodies, DG. I agree with you. We can't put our hand on the sand. We are to lay bare some of these difficult questions. And having said that, I think, please, the MEC from the Eastern Cape and the, of both health and finance are here. This thing of districts being create jobs for people, because that's why it is a post office. We must be blunt now. We must stamp the authority. We will stamp our authority as Parliament because we're not talking about the hearsay. We have just from an oversight from the Eastern Cape, we observe that a district in Azot are so bloated. People that are supposed to be in the ward are in district. A postman and women, that thing must come to an end. It's not about what I want as the chair, nor what the portfolio committee wants, nor what the minister wants. It's about really, are we going to be able to service our people? The population is become wider. We're at 50-something million, but health workers are not increasing. That's the problem.
And I fully agree with you. I support you on that, this issue of revitalization, but it really needs, rather than building more, but again, you are building white elephants. That's the problem. So the planning is going to be very important, and I do think that we'll have to look into that and then begin to say what is it. And as I'm my last comment, I would have appreciated if all provinces were here when you were making your all provinces that were supposed to come here, because other provinces have missed what you are saying. Because at the end, services are provided in provinces. That's the bottom line. So I thought I just needed to make those comments, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much.
Okay. Just one last opportunity, the window of an opportunity. For those NGOs who are sitting here, coming from the broader society, because we have advertised our meetings in terms of our other core business, which is public participation, so that those NGOs that responded, may I allow them one question per NGO if they have those questions, because they are here to participate in this public hearing. Yes, sir? One. There's only one.
Only one.
Honorable Member Shopestole, you will then close. You'll be the last one, and then we hand over to the department to respond.
Good morning. It's Russell Rainsburg again from the Rural Health Advocacy Project. I think I have one/two questions. The first one was on slide 8. The share of provincial equitable allocation, is that the Ministry of or the Provincial Department of Health share of the equitable share, and does that include the conditional grant? Because I see a lot of provinces just consolidate the two together and they say this is what we're spending on health, and they don't split out the grants that are earmarked. And the second one is that, maybe just in response to the comment on the districts, I think the question is, do we need provinces, not districts? Because I think from where we're sitting, we've often seen that districts are underfunded by provinces. And that's ultimately what places the burden on the districts to deliver services with an ever-decreasing envelope. And I think that's what's putting our ARV, our NHI, and other expansionary programs at risk.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member Shopestole, after that, we will then allow the department to respond, and we close the discussion on the presentation by the Department of Health.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, the 31st of March 2017 is the end of the government financial year. That will be the end of all the forgiveness, pardons, excuses. For the 2017-2018 financial year, we don't want excuses. We want this budget to work for the people. And we have identified ourselves and yourselves, all the weaknesses. By the 31st, everything that is not right must stop. Chairperson Mampot, I hope you are communicating with my friend there, the secretary, to call the police outside, so that those provinces that give pap and vors to the sick people, when we finish by the end of business today, they must be in the police vans. That's all. We can't have people who murder our people. That is murder, broad daylight murder. And patient folders, that one you can excuse them up to the end of, or up to the 31st of March. Otherwise, anybody who's seen on these two things is a material for the Correctional Services Department. Honorable Paul.
Well, the police proposal, that should sound as a warning. because remember there must be first a warning before you act. So it's a warning that where people deviate at this approval, you might end up calling police outside. So that as we finish to do their presentation and they are found to have violated the law, then they go to taken by police. That's breaking of the law. Okay. Now that's fine. Over to the DG.
Thank you, honorable members. The first one on the tangible outcomes is slide number 91. Honorable members, the way I explained it is that patrons, if you look, we have projects that are completed, projects, and we link the budget to that. But we have multi-year projects. We'll show you the milestone, that these are at 75%. These are 20%, meaning we've got that kind of breakdown per province. We'll show you per province and then the amount, because normally when we report and the Auditor General audits us on performance, they only look at completed projects for which a certificate has been issued. They don't take into account the others. So we want to show you milestones as to exactly where we are with each project. And I think it's a much more detailed report. Like I said, linked to that is inspections that we perform. Regarding the move of the transversal project, the way we work, honorable members, is that for the specifications and the bid committees and so on, these are officials who do other work. They don't do that full time. So our SCM office is actually small. It's very small. So they do other related work. But to be honest, this has become just too big. And we don't want risks. And we prefer that kind of function, the office of the CPO be beefed up, but we support them technically. Page 91, again, it's the same answer I provided. We've got a breakdown, actually, per project. We can show you which projects are completed and the milestones, and we can link those milestones to money that has been spent. We can give you that detailed report. We couldn't. I mean, this is a PowerPoint presentation. We have a much more thick report per project. For the in-kind grant, and we monitor that also for the provinces. With regard to public-private partnership, this is what we say we want to explore and interrogate an investigation. I'm happy to say that you have such an example, honorable member, in KZN, and the Chief Albert Luthuli was based on similar models. We want to understand what is it that needs to be done along the same lines, but at affordable costs, because one area of concern has been the cost escalation. But it seems to be a much more reasonable model, actually, if you look, with very good services, and would like to see in future, perhaps that's the way to go. Regarding the Honorable Manana, yes, indeed, the Rural Health Advocacy Project, we've actually invited them to our meeting to come and present the HR, but also the services, because they've also raised concerns about how, in particular, community service allocation of human resources is. Like, the original intention of community service was to make sure that people can go and provide services where they're needed most. But what tends to happen with community service, people find reasons not to go to rural areas. So it's probably one area where we'll have to engage further. They wrote a very scathing report saying that we've moved away from doing exactly that. And we'd like to make sure that those principles continue to apply. But of course, the funding, it's still a concern. And I think we need to engage more on that. Accruals, honorable members, I think it is a problem. Perhaps if you have an opportunity, each province must say what their situation of the accruals are and perhaps explain the reasons. We don't have that problem at national. but we also can't say it's not our problem. We work with the provinces. We are trying to find solutions to solve these problems. And this is why, honorable members, for all these years, we've put the audit, the outcome of the audit of provinces in our performance, something that is not achievable, but we still wrote it anyway, because we are partners and we'd like to solve this problem together. The vaccines, honorable member, remember we had this public-private partnership with BioVac, and because you cannot produce vaccines for yourselves only, we were informed by the UN that we also have an opportunity. In fact, South Africa is the only country with capacity to produce vaccines in the continent for the UN, but we've not been doing it purely because of the contracts that have been signed by BioVac itself with the other suppliers. So we have given over that PPP component to the Department of Science and Technology for the same reason, because they have to look at technology transfer, because BioVac needs to have tech transfer so that they can locally produce. Now, without tech transfer, they'll forever be an agent of vaccines, and it actually is not logical. So it's work in progress, and Department of Science and Technology has started that project. On non-negotiables, now, slide 68. Honorable members, what I was trying to say is that what we did, and with the minister's guidance and the MEC, we came up with what we say, if provinces, if anything, if they allocate their budget, these are non-negotiables, meaning they must always make sure money is available for food, is available for medicines, is available for equipment, is available for infection control. So we have that list, and we monitor that, and we check whether they are underspending or overspending. If they underspend, we follow up with them. So what you see is areas where they underspend, but it's not the total budget of the province. It's just on non-negotiables. And it helps because it's a monitoring tool. If a province, if people say they don't have food in a hospital, you can go and check in their non-negotiables, did they allocate? How come there's no food? If they're underspending, it means they're not buying food, or they're buying something else. You know, it's a very good monitoring tool, even for oversight. It actually empowers yourselves in your constituency work and monitoring. Acquisition of ambulances. We've actually come up with the regulations, norms, and standards for provinces. Now, provinces are at different levels of implementation. Some say they're not ready now, and they have a multi-budget planning, but they have to work indeed with the municipalities. But the advice we got from experts led by Professor Wallis, and it's logical, it says actually ambulance services should not be a competence of municipalities. It should fall under provinces. You know why? Because of these boundaries. What happens is that with the boundaries, once you reach a certain municipality boundary, then an ambulance cannot fetch people, and it's a problem. You'll forever have problems with people who say, oh, but an ambulance did not collect precise, even if it's nearer, but because of the boundaries, it's creating problems. So these regulations are actually saying provinces must take control of these services. They must have one number, all must be yellow. You know, they're very prescriptive, and we're hoping that they'll be implementing. And we have a report about the level of readiness of each province. Infrastructure, maintenance versus capital, the CFO will respond. And Honorable James, about the Constitution, I think that I won't be able to answer. I'm sorry. I apologize. The returning Cuban doctors, no, actually, we have a very good program. When our Cuban doctors come back, they do what we call the last leg of their training. And that last leg means they will not qualify unless they've got local training. They are trained in our local institutions, meaning one leg is in Cuba, the other leg in South Africa with local institutions, after which they write exams and they are examined here, and they then qualify and graduate. So it's a very systematic program that involves our deans. Our deans are part of that, and it's quite fascinating. The NHI bill, honorable members, is coming. I am confident and firm it is coming on its way. Audit of homelands, sure, we'll try. I don't know. I am not sure whether, but we have, what we've done though, honorable members, the Law Reform Commission has done an analysis of all the laws, their constitutionality, their appropriateness, some are obsolete. So we've got that Law Reform Commission report, and we've come up with a bill, a plan on how we're going to correct all these multiple legal problems they've come up with that we need to resolve. I think that's the best we can do. The other chair, I think it's beyond us. But we are sensitive to the issues and maybe we can address that problem as part of the NHI policy framework. And maybe that's where we should rather invest instead of doing another analysis, rather invest in making sure people can access care. Madam Chair, NGO input, yeah, 31st March, oh yes, honorable member, on our side, be ready. We can assure you. Thank you. Over to the CFO and Dr. Peter, you still had one question. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question was the infrastructure, who does it belong to? I think in terms of Guillaume, it belongs to the Public Works Department. They're the custodians of those assets. They do also have an obligation to do statutory maintenance on these facilities, which we pay for, obviously. And then also the planned maintenance also falls part of that. But essentially the asset is a Public Works asset. And even the assets that we do on behalf of provinces through the indirect grant, we also transfer it back to the health departments in provinces through the Guillaume Act.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, honourable members. I think the question related to the short-term insurance products. So just to provide some context, the short-term insurance products were being sold. You often see them on TV and in the media, and they often are presented as though they're medical scheme products, they're medical aid products. And often the public purchase these products with the understanding that they bought a medical aid, only to realize when they actually go to the provider of care that they actually have a short-term insurance product. And these products were being regulated by the Financial Services Board. And after much discussion with the FSB, there was a realization that these products should actually fall under the control of the Council for Medical Schemes. So the FSB believed that it would be best that these products are regulated by the Council for Medical Schemes. However, these products are being sold to individuals that effectively earn an income of around 10,000 or less, and they're not able to afford a traditional medical scheme given the structure of a medical scheme. So what the Council for Medical Schemes decided is that these products would have to be restructured so they can provide a reasonable set of comprehensive benefits, albeit at a lower cost, for these members so that they would be able to afford them, but they should be comprehensive. So the Council of Medical Schemes, in discussion with these low-cost insurance product providers, have agreed that there will be a two-year exemption period, and over that time they will restructure the benefits so that they can be aligned with those of the Council for Medical Schemes requirements, and they will then come back thereafter and present those products. So they have a two-year exemption where they'll be able to sell the products while they're realigning them to the requirements of the CMS.
Indeed, it was a fruitful engagement. I must thank you firstly for coming to make us even cleverer on these health issues. Indeed, it was informative, and looking at the robust engagement just on your presentation, you can see the greater interest of members, to learn so that they can
also be relevant when they interact with the provincial department. So Stephen Cove, you would have said, we have sharpened the saw. So we are so actually, that's why you heard my colleague here say that he wishes that all the MECs were here, which means people are so ready. They really want to engage now. So I'm hoping that even in our engagement, because this is what we also emphasize, that I mean, it will not be good enough that we engage, but also we don't make an impact. So I think this engagement will assist us to achieve on that one, make an impact. And also, as committees, we also understand the fact that as we point fingers to these departments failing to meet their mandate, we are equally to blame, because we're supposed to vigorously do our oversight and make sure that they achieve on their mandate. So thank you very much. I think we're very happy, and this was an eye-opener, and indeed we have achieved on the robust engagement, and we have gained deeper insights on all the issues and you know that you are addressing, but also your alignment with your strategic development goals, your MDP and your MTEF, medium-term strategic framework. But then we all agree that the missing link is this close monitoring, but also monitored by your department, but also by the portfolio committees, close monitoring, so that at the end the people on the ground benefit from this budget. But then the other key matter here is that we are called upon by National Treasury to, at least there is some budget, try and do more with the little we have. Yes, there must be impact, because there is money. There is money. At least let's get some impact. Now, if we do it on a yearly basis, that thing will grow into something. But there must be impact. It will not be good enough, there's money coming out, but at the end of the day, we don't see the impact. And just to remind ourselves, it is, by the way, it's not our money, it is the taxpayers' money. So there must be an impact. So if all of us can insist on an impact, doesn't matter how small the budget is, at least let's see where this money has gone and what it has achieved for the people. I think that's the attitude I want us to. But if we complain, we will also not be innovative, you know, and find ways of using this little money to change the life of the people in the health sector. Thank you very much. We're done now with this presentation. I think we will then move on to the next presentation. When I look at everybody sitting here, I'm sure you need this